You touch a key, and it's a completely hard freeze of the system.
Nice!
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust, except for us. Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
And welcome back to yet another edition of the award-winning, world-famous... Oh, well, it's just a bunch of guys from Data Doctors here talking to you about your computers, your technology. We're here every Saturday to try to enlighten you on all things tech, cell phones, video cameras, computers, scanners, printers, the internet. It doesn't matter to us. We live it, we breathe it, we drink it, we feel it every single day. We thought, why not come and talk to people on the weekends about it? And here we are, 12, 14, I've lost count. In fact, I ran out of fingers is what it is. something in the neighborhood of almost, we're coming up on our 14th or 15th year of having this wonderful home here at KTAR to talk to you. And we are available to you in any number of ways. A, if you are the old school analog type, you can call us on the Computer Corner Data Doctors hotline, 602-277-5827, which oddly enough is the same hotline, Kevin Church, as every other show on the station. And joining us in the studio, Data Doctors Ken Colburn and Kevin Church, and Data Doctor in Training Taylor Colburn.
As always.
As always. You started training, at five? I mean, as far as for the show.
Not really, because I came in like every once in a while and made sounds and was like amazed at how they came back in my ear.
Yeah, you had the headphones on. And
what is that?
I'll never forget that. He was sitting in that chair right there.
I remember that.
With the headphones, and he was just making these.
Just freaking out.
Yeah, he just thought that was cool. So, I mean, at five, what do you expect?
I don't know. I think we still do that every Saturday. Even at our age.
We do. If you would prefer to interact with us digitally, you can join us online at datadoctors.com and either put a slash in the word radio, which will take you right to the radio page, or just click on the radio show link, which will get you to today's offerings that include everything from the resources and the theme to the Geek Speak of the Week and various ways for you to ask questions, make comments, post your thoughts on our blog, listen to our podcasts, listen to previous radio shows going back, I don't know, 7, 8 years. The Free Help Center allows you to go back and look at my advice columns that go back to 19 and 99. A little disclaimer, some of that stuff from 19 and 99 is more for entertainment value at this point, since most of that information is pretty close to irrelevant these days. So it's
or
really,
if you have a Packard Bell at home with Windows 95 or 3.1, it's probably still pretty good.
Or back then, we were probably talking about the Commodores.
Ah.
Anyway, 602-277-5827. That's the most common way for you to call in, because this week we're talking about something that I don't care who you are. I don't care how tech savvy you are. I don't care how new you are. We all have to deal with the same problem. The newer you are to the internet and email, the more likely you're still struggling with why this is happening. And this is based on Jim's question this week, my advice column that'll be in the Tribune newspapers and the various media sites that we work with on tomorrow, business section. And it had to do with, somebody's using my email address to sign me up to like newsletters and all this stuff. And I mean, aren't there laws? And how can they do this? Who out there listening, go ahead, just make sure and keep one hand on the wheel as you're driving. Raise your hand if you've ever gotten something that looks like you sent out, which you clearly didn't, or you suddenly got subscribed to some new service or newsletter or whatever, which you didn't do, or you've gotten anything in your inbox that looked a little suspicious. Raise your hand. Go ahead. It's unanimous. It's impossible. Unless you're just not using an email address, it's nearly impossible not to have that happen. So we're going to talk about why. Why is it so easy for other people to perpetrate these acts? I mean, people pretend to be who they're not in all walks of life. In your personal life, in your business life, online. And online, it's very, very easy for people to pretend to be somebody that they're not. So we're going to talk about all the different ways that they're doing this. Spoofing email addresses, email harvesters, all the technology that's floating around that has nothing to do with an individual that's trying to gather this information. And what you can do to try to protect yourself from becoming a victim of email spoofing and this extra garbage that constantly berates our inboxes. And the longer you've had your email address, the more likely you have this and the more volume you probably have. And believe it or not, what you're doing every day online and how you present yourself in forums and MySpace and a bunch of other places has a lot to do with whether you're going to get a little bit of this or a lot of this. So hopefully that'll be of some value to you. If not, go ahead and call in with any question you have, 602-277-5827. I only give you that number for educational purposes because all the lines are booked, which is usually what happens at the beginning of the show. But as you hear somebody hang up, you can try try dialing for dollars, I guess, huh? Remember those? Was that an old, was it television or radio? Or was that even before your time, Kevin?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay. My age is showing, isn't it? Somebody out there remembers dialing for dollars. Shoot me an email and or call up and refresh my memory. I'm starting to get old here.
Or use their rotary phone to dial in.
No! So again, if you join us online, datadoctors.com, you'll see in the resources section, actually says this week's links, everything from the advice column to an explanation of what email spoofing is. The email harvesters, a lot of people don't realize there's actually these little electronic programs running around harvesting email addresses off of blogs, forums, public email or public websites. I mean, anywhere you have posted your email address, that's one of the ways that they're getting it and perpetrating these acts. There's an example of what happened when somebody had their Google Gmail account hacked, and how far it wasn't just a ha-ha, I got your account. It was a pretty interesting, detailed example of how far they can go just by getting a hold of some information, just small amount of information to perpetrate what would be considered identity theft. Not in the traditional sense where they went and stole a bunch of money out of somebody's account, but they used this person's Gmail account to create other services and products, and of course, the bill went to this guy. So, also, there's one of the pieces of advice we're going to hear, and we're going to go into detail later on, but you really should have at least two email addresses. You should have the one that you use that's personal and private and important to you. You need to protect that as much as possible. And then you have a secondary one, which you can get from any one of these free email services. Google's got Gmail. Yahoo's got their Yahoo, right? Microsoft has Hotmail or their Live Mail, and I mean they keep changing
all kinds
the name.
Of crazy stuff.
So there's a review of the 14. There's 14 different or to the top 14 free email services. A link to the reviews, so you can try to decide. Well, based on what they're offering me for free, which is great. That's the great thing about the internet. There's so many cool things that are free. Or there's a really cool thing you can do. You know how sometimes you want to go sign up for something and it's like, give us your email address and we'll let you download this thing. And
yeah.
So once you do, you really, after that, who cares, right? It's not like you're going to have a long-term relationship necessarily. You can actually get a free disposable email address. It's only good for like 10 minutes.
And
if you need
really?
It to, yeah, if you need it to be, to go a little longer, you can, but I mean, it's really pretty cool. So anyway, check out all those resources. Along with some other ways to avoid phishing and all that stuff, so that you don't become, your identity does not become trafficked on the internet. Speaking of traffic, it's that time. Carla Cruz is going to tell us what is going on in the real world when it comes to traffic. Carla? Welcome back to the Computer Corner. It's the, hey, somebody stole my email address edition of the Computer Corner. Something that just about everybody has had to deal with at one point or another, where you get this strange thing where somebody's mad at you because they got an email that says it came from you, or something bounced and came back to you and you're saying, I never sent that out, or you're suddenly subscribed to some big newsletter or something or other. I, because the name of our company is Data Doctors, I just magically get added to these newsletter subscriptions that have to do with medical devices. Because there's some automated process that somebody decided, hey, let's just spam these guys and see if they don't mind. And I never signed up for them, so how did it happen? Well, that and many other questions are going to be answered as we go through the show. Join us online to learn more if you can't wait for us to talk about it. You can actually start reading about it right on our website, datadoctors.com/radio, and look at all the links that we have posted up there. But the main purpose of this show is to try to help as many people as we possibly can. And usually it's not about, well, this one, I want to fix this one specific issue. It's, can you learn from somebody else's pain? So pain victim number one today is Danielle.
Danielle,
how are you, Danielle? You're having a little pain. Before we get to your question, do you have that issue? Do you experience what we're talking about today, where you get these strange emails? You ever wonder?
Yes.
You ever wonder how the heck's this happening and why?
Sometimes.
And normally, what do you do with those messages?
I delete them.
Good for you.
And I have 3 email accounts.
And all 3 of them have this happening, correct?
No.
No. Okay, so you've done a good job of policing who you give what to.
Yes.
Good for you. See, that's a great example. All right, so you are working with this technology that boy, is sold as being phenomenal and wonderful. It's called Bluetooth.
Yes.
But you're not having a very good time.
No, I cannot get Windows to recognize.
Do you just one of those interesting factoid things. Do you know why they call it Bluetooth?
I don't.
This was spearheaded by Nokia, who was referring to a Scandinavian hero who apparently had gum disease or something real bad and his teeth turned blue, right? but he was a uniter. He united a lot of opposing factions, you know, historically. And so this technology, Bluetooth, was supposed to unite a lot of handheld devices and make it real easy for them to talk to each other.
And yeah, that's, it's not.
And that's exactly what you're experiencing, right? It's not. See, now here's, I don't know if you've listened to this show much, but there's a couple of things that we've said over and over again that really, you're proving the fact. Wired is always better than wireless. Whether it's a cordless phone, your home phone, a cell phone, an internet connection, or in this case, Bluetooth is just a means to do something, right? What is it that you're actually trying to accomplish?
I'm trying to use ActiveSync to synchronize my Pocket PC from a distance, so I'm not having to be right with my computer.
Okay,
all
so
the time.
Before Bluetooth, how did the rest of us do that?
Through a USB cable.
Okay. And so you want the luxury of not having to be right next to the machine in the sink, okay? And you're willing to put up with all of this grief just so you don't have to be 3 feet closer to the computer.
Or move a photo.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
How often are you syncing?
I sync like every 10 to 15 minutes.
Really?
I have a lot of stuff going on that I sync up for, like email and different things.
Well, then maybe that's what you really need to think about is how you're getting your... I get the email part. But I didn't have to sync every time with my Trio to get my email. So if that's the primary reason you're doing it so often, because typically syncing you're going to do like once a day.
Yeah.
If you're doing it every 10 or 15 minutes, you may be trying to use these processes improperly.
Okay.
So what I was going to suggest to you is, even if we could figure out magically over the phone something we can't see and get it working for you.
Yeah.
Bluetooth is not a very reliable technology because there's so many things that can jump up and cause whatever was working yesterday not to work today. Okay? So what I want to do is step back from your solution to the problem and present you with some new ideas that are probably going to be better long-term solutions.
Okay.
One would be get with your provider, your cell phone provider, to find out what it takes to get the email client that's built into the Trio to work properly, so you don't have to actually go through the sync. You're actually going through one of those systems that does that automatically. And then two, just do yourself a favor. Just go with the reliable USB cable and don't worry about all of the things that can happen once you get the wireless going. Because like I said, I can guarantee you with Bluetooth, I've gone through this myself. I gave up. It's just not worth the hassle, especially for something where I can just walk in, you know, plug it in and go.
Okay.
So I keep it simple, I guess, is what I'm saying. Hang tight. I'm going to take you off the air, and we're going to talk a little more in detail. But, folks, the lesson to be learned here, wired is always better than wireless. The solution you're looking for may not actually be the right solution because you're kind of approaching it the wrong way. So don't ever solve a problem by saying, it's this technology I want to work. Solve the problem by working from what you're trying to accomplish. More of that coming up. It's the Data Doctors on the Computer Corner. Stay tuned for Someone Stole My Email. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about that aggravating situation that we all experience. Someone's using my email address for stuff that I don't like. Coming up, we got James, who's going to tell us or ask us a question that I think a lot of people will have about how can I be sending stuff to myself? I'm sending spam to myself?
I'll get one of those occasionally. I'll get like the one with no content. It's from me. Like, was I drunk last night at 4 in the morning?
No, but I'm going to explain why that happens and what they're trying to actually accomplish from that. But before we get to that, we're going to talk to Kathy, who's got a great question that I think a lot of people have had over the years. And it has to do with this little circuitry, this option you have in Windows to let your Windows hibernate. Right, Kathy?
Yes, I guess my husband must have that turned on. How do you, when you're online and that happens, can you turn it off?
So you're actually whipping around, you're doing whatever you're doing, and then suddenly it goes into hibernate?
Yes.
And is it because you hadn't touched anything for a while, or is it literally while you're doing something?
It's while I'm doing something.
Okay, well, how old is this machine?
I think it's 2 or 3 years old.
And which flavor of Windows are you running?
I don't know. I don't know a lot about computers, but okay. I just know the word hibernate.
Okay, well, the older the operating system, like Windows 98, Windows ME, those operating systems had some horrific results when people used Hibernate.
Uh-huh.
So typically, if it was an older machine running an older operating system, we advise our customers to just turn it off.
Okay.
Don't even use Hibernate. Now, you understand Hibernate, there's another power saving, because Hibernate is supposed to help you save power.
Uh-huh.
Really important on laptops, not so much on a desktop.
Uh-huh.
Is this a laptop or a desktop?
It was a laptop.
Okay. It was?
It is.
I was like, what is it now?
A mech warrior.
It's now a mech warrior. Okay. Okay. So Hibernate has value for a person that's on the road that's not plugged in, right? But if you're like a lot of people, you have a laptop, but it's always plugged in.
Yes.
Then Hibernate's almost pointless unless you really want to make sure you squeeze. I mean, you don't waste any little extra pieces of energy out there.
Uh-huh.
What we call tree huggers. As we come up on Earth Day, I got to be very careful. I mean, I conserving and conservation is important. It's but when it comes to computers, you have to balance that with usability. So,
okay.
Somebody set up your Hibernate circuit. Now, the difference between Hibernate and standby is pretty significant. So, standby will also give you power savings without the hassle that Hibernate typically. So in order for Hibernate to work, what it does is it looks at everything you're doing.
Uh-huh.
It captures all that information and puts it into a temporary file. Saves that information onto your hard drive and then literally shuts your computer off. And then when you turn it back on, because it knows it went down in Hibernate mode, it comes back up. It looks at that special file it created and reopens everything.
I see.
Okay. So a lot of things can go wrong when that's what you're doing. Like, one of the biggest problems was people would go into Hibernate mode, and when they came back up, it wouldn't come back up.
Okay. Yep. I haven't tried to turn it back on yet.
Oh, so this has only happened once?
Yes, it has, just once.
Okay. Well, it could just be, hopefully it was a fluke. Standby actually gets your computer into kind of a low power mode, but it's still kind of groggy. It's just kind of a lightly sleep instead of a Hibernate where it's a deep sleep.
Okay.
So you can like hit your space bar or wiggle your mouse and it comes back up.
Okay.
Okay, so that saves power. And frankly, the most power being used is by your monitor.
Uh-huh.
So if you are a tree hugger and you do want to save electricity, just get in the habit of turning your monitor off whenever you're not going to use the computer.
Okay.
Because then it's not sitting there sucking up energy. It's and then your computer will go into standby mode and you're, okay, I'm talking about desktops.
Okay.
Obviously with a laptop, it's all one piece.
Right.
So are you familiar? You want to write down a few steps here?
Sure.
So here's how you adjust how your power options are configured.
Okay.
You click on the start button and go to the control panel.
All right.
Okay. When you get to the control panel, you should have an icon that says power options.
Yes.
When you open that up, you'll see something that says power schemes, which basically says whenever I'm plugged into the wall, do this. Whenever I'm running on battery, do this.
Okay.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
Yep.
So you can say, turn the monitor off after 5 minutes if I'm not plugged into the wall. If I am plugged into the wall, turn it off after 20 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. The hard drive, if I haven't used it for an hour, just go ahead and let that baby spin down.
Okay.
And then have the whole system stand by after X number of minutes or hours of inactivity.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
All right.
The third little tab in that is called Hibernate.
Okay.
Okay, if you click on that, it's real simple. You either turn it on or you turn it off.
Okay.
So literally you can go in and turn off the Hibernate.
All right.
Okay? So now, if you turn it off and you're still experiencing the same issue, there's somebody else in the soup.
Okay.
Okay, but that's a quick way to figure out, is it really a Hibernate thing or not?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, it does.
Okay, good luck
and
with
I'm
that.
Sure, I'll try it, and you guys are great. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And by the way, anybody else that really wants more specific information about the difference between standby and Hibernate, it's a column I wrote, goodness, October 27, 2005, but it's still relevant. If you go to the free help center in our at datadoctors.com, either scroll down to the bottom or where there's the search item, or click on the search link and just put in the word Hibernate, and it should come up as the first item of the 50,000 that'll come up. And there's a very detailed explanation of the difference between Hibernate and standby and how to set it and all that stuff. So hopefully that helps out there. Let's go to James, who actually has that question about our theme. We're talking about these strange things that have, you know, somebody stealing my email address or using my email address to do strange stuff.
Just recently I started getting email just from one particular ad, emails from myself.
Mm.
And, of course, I can't add myself to my junk mail file because...
Oh, sure you could.
It's you. Well, they won't let me, let's put it that way.
You could try, but, of course, then you may as well just not use your email anymore, right?
Right.
So why is it... How come there's this junk that says it's from you to you?
Right.
Well, let's pretend that, let's take your good guy hat on off and put your bad guy hat on.
Okay.
I want to make sure that I get to you one way or another. So if I create spam that says it's from you to you, it's more likely it's going to get to you. Because A, it's going to get past your whatever filter, right? Because nobody sets up a filter saying, don't send anything, don't let anything come through that's from me.
Right.
Most people don't have that set up, and even if they could, they wouldn't, just because there's so many other possibilities where if you're CCing somebody, you CC yourself during a, you know, you want to make sure you get a copy of something you sent out, well, then you'd never get it.
Right.
So it's just not realistic. So, and they know that. The bad guys know that. So it's kind of like, in the real world, the example would be, if I wanted to cheat the system... If I addressed something to you from you and then dropped it in the mailbox without postage, they're going to return it to you. Right?
That's right. I never thought about that.
So, I mean, it's the same scam. It's the same deal. There's nothing to keep anybody from saying this is who sent the email when, in fact, it had nothing to do with that.
Can I set up a filter for words inside the email if it seems to be the same thing?
You can, but they change that. They are smart enough. See, they have the upper hand. They know about the filtering technology that's out there.
Okay?
So they can spend the next 6, 12, 15 hours figuring out how to get around the filter that you're most likely using, right? And then the filter company has to figure out that they figured out this new hole, and then they have to create a new patch, an update, to the filter that allows them to block that particular exploit.
Right.
Right? And, of course, they're on to the next exploit. So simple word-based blocking, although it's still worth doing, it really is becoming less and less useful and relevant because these guys constantly change. The computer programs they use to attack you, they're automated processes. They don't use cut and paste. They literally... create one-off emails so that they're all different, so that the 1 million spam messages that went out are 1 million unique messages.
Well, it seems to come from the same ad, which happens to be for one of those mail enhancement products.
Email enhancement?
Yeah, email enhancement.
Exactly. Email enhancement.
You're dark.
They do use some words in there on every email that I might be able to peg.
Yeah, you can. And if it's just this one, then you'll be in good shape.
Right.
But if it's not, then, you know, but you understand why they do what they do and how they're doing it. And
oh, absolutely. And so far, this is the only one that it's happening on.
How long have you had this email address?
For a very long time.
Okay. Do you have a secondary address?
Yes.
You do. Okay. And you know when to use that?
Yes.
Okay. That's one of the reasons why your inbox is fairly clean, because you've followed that guidance. You've been living it. And you're the example of what happens. It's very minimal. Whereas people that use the same address for everything, you got no shot. you once that thing is just loaded up, they're going, well, can I get them to stop? Well, the only thing you can do really is when your inbox is just flooded with garbage from every possible walk of life, the only thing you can really do is start over, because there's no way. I mean, you know, have you ever unsubscribed to something that came in your inbox?
You're just telling them it's a valid email.
In a lot of cases. Now, you have to separate legitimate companies. If it's some big company you recognize, some research firm, some media site, something else, and somebody else subscribed you, you can unsubscribe and you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
So if it's somebody you've heard of, then you should feel very comfortable unsubscribing because it's a legitimate source, right?
Right.
But Kevin, I mean, you know as well as I do, certainly male enhancement or gambling or any kind of adult content or games or any of that kind of stuff that you didn't have anything to do with, the minute you unsubscribe, what you've done is validated to that spammer that your email address is active and it's real.
It's like those pickpockets that hold up signs that say, you know, beware of pickpockets, and then you grab your valuables and they know exactly where they are.
You've been to Italy, haven't you?
I have.
Naples. So that's one of the things they do. They'll also do this to also try to figure out if they can validate your email address, right? See if you get bounces and that kind of thing.
Right.
So when you get an email that has nothing in it, there's usually a component in there, a web bug or something that says, aha, they got it. So we know that that email is valid. That's all they're trying to do when you get those blank emails that are from you to you.
Mm. Right.
There's usually a lot of times they'll put like what's called a web bug, it's just hidden code that just reports back to them that says, okay, they saw it. So in other words, that email address is valid. Let's start.
Like a return receipt.
What's that?
Like a return receipt.
Exactly, but it's completely invisible, and basically, let's start spamming these guys.
Well, I do want to mention before you leave me that I am a longtime listener. I listen to you guys every Saturday, and you are very informative and very helpful.
Thank you, James. That makes it all worthwhile. Appreciate you calling in, and that was a great question because I know exactly. Just about everybody I've talked to about this subject, they're all saying, well, what about this? So, great. Thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care now.
Bye.
They're trafficking in your identity. And if you let them, they'll continue to do it. But for now, let's talk about real traffic with Carla Cruz. Carla.
Hey.
Has someone been using your email address, acting like they're you and causing you grief? You getting bounces? Are you getting upset people saying, stop sending this to me? Join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. You can learn why this is happening, how it's happening, and some of the things you can and cannot do about it. It's the Computer Corner with the Data Doctors. And if you're in business, you probably have a website and domain and mail and all kinds of good stuff. And if that starts to get used improperly, not only do you have to worry about it as a user, you have to worry about it as a company. So Sherry's joining us to share her pain.
Hi, how are you?
Good. The kinds of things that you're dealing with as a business owner that has a website that's being exploited, or actually a domain that's being exploited, or email.
Yes.
Tell us your story.
Okay. I got my website and my domain and hosted it from 1995 to today.
You are what we call an early adopter.
So that I, this is, you know, the only reason I did it is so I would never, never, never have to change my email address.
And you are very smart. You'd be amazed how many businesses are still hanging their business email off of, you know, AOL or MSN or one of those others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nightmare if you ever want to change your email address.
Yes.
As a business especially. So good for you. Very smart. Those business owners out there that are still doing that, listen to Sherry. She's a smart one. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So in the beginning, I didn't have a web page if you went to my domain site name.
Okay.
It would come up, but it would just be whatever my hosting company had
written
and lots of advertising. It did help eliminate all of these emails, the junk emails coming in, and they're actually saying that they are Joe Jones at International Financiers or Jim Bush or JJ or
bunch of made
bunch
up names,
of numbers,
right?
A whole bunch of stuff, and there's only my email address,
right,
nobody else's.
So they're spoofing the return address. They're using a real domain. Your domain is real.
Yes.
Right? See, and most domains have a rule at the mail server that says anything that's misaddressed, send that to the administrator. And I'm assuming you're the administrator.
Yes.
So I could put Bozo the Clown at your website.
Yes.
And you're going to get it.
Okay.
Okay? So when it comes to these bad guys spoofing the return address, they don't have to be right about the actual address. And you as the administrator, you're going to see all of this action.
Okay.
And that means whoever's getting this spam and they're blaming it on you, they're going to be blaming you.
Yes.
For sending that junk.
They keep telling me, I get from, I forget the domain, where it says that you've been blacklisted, and then I have trouble sending my own emails out.
Right. Now, if you get blacklisted, this is where you find out how good your hosting company is.
Okay.
They're the ones you want to go to. Now, folks that are out there, blacklisting means that there are these conglomerations of companies that track people that are supposedly spammers, and they publish this list. And so other mail server companies will look at this list and go, okay, if they're on that list, we're not going to let any mail through any of our servers.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happens, it's kind of like losing your identity, right? You can't, mm-hmm. you can't communicate with anybody. So you got to go back through and clear your reputation, if you will. So that's where your hosting company should step in to give you advice, offer to do it for you, whatever it is to help you get off those blacklists and to prove that you are a legitimate organization.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's your first
step. I tried to do it myself, and it didn't work very well.
Yeah, it's kind of like doing brain surgery on yourself.
an analogy.
I suppose there are some brain surgeons out that they can do it. But, I mean, as an average user, to try to even go down that path, it's too important. So hire some professionals to help you on that.
Awesome.
Now, we had some other things that we wanted to talk about. Now, I'm going to put you on hold because I want you to hold through the break because we're going to talk about something else that you need to be aware of now that you do have a website up. All right?
Okay.
There's something out there called email harvesters that if you're not careful about what you do on your webpage, right, Kevin?
Right.
They're going to be able to get lots of information about your company to use to perpetrate against you as spam and so on and so forth. So if you don't have a lot of sophistication to fight all this stuff off, there's some simple things you can do on your company's website to ensure that they're not able to harvest those messages or those email addresses. So hang tight. We're going to talk some more to, I think it was Kathy, Karen, or maybe not. Looks like she loved us. It's the Computer Corner. We're talking about how to protect your email address more gooder. Stay tuned.
You touch a key, and it just completely hard freezes the system.
Nice!
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off, then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust. Except for us.
Right.
You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We are the Data Doctors, Ken Colburn, Kevin Church, and Taylor Colburn. Yeah?
Yeah.
And this is where we're actually going to get you to actually contribute to the show here, huh?
Yeah. Well, you've been talking about stuff I don't really know.
Well, you do.
So, I kind of do.
You do. There's a tip you have for parents out there that have kids that want their own email address. We're going to get to that in a little bit. And also, we were talking to Sherry before we went to break mm-hmm. about this thing called an email harvester and what you should be worried about with your websites that are out there. But before we go back to Sherry, it's time for that part of the show that we try to teach you some new word, something that you can use to sound really cool at your next dinner party, your next cocktail party, or if you're on the playground, I guess. It's our Geek Speak of the Week. Don't let those people that call themselves geeks and nerds talk down to you. Tell them you know the vernacular. I know what that means by listening to this segment every week. This week's Geek Speak of the Week is
Errorists.
It's Errorist. Actually,
yeah.
Errorist. So it's like terrorist without the T.
Yeah, it's clever.
Yeah.
It's one who encourages and propagates errors.
Well, we know some errorists out there on the internet, don't we?
Yeah, I think recently my parents were this.
they became errorists?
Warning me of a credit card scam that wasn't really a scam. It was just
those of you that have,
may have been there.
And virtually everybody, especially when they're newbies, new to the internet, has fallen for something where they got something that they thought was legitimate, and it said,
legitimate.
Send this to every... Yeah, it was on CNN, therefore it's legitimate. Send this to everybody you know. Right? The two cues that most people that have been around the block pick up on when they see these is, A, they refer to some big company, Microsoft, CNN, so on and so forth.
Right.
Which, if those companies were already warning people, then it's already out in the news. And if they haven't, this isn't real. Two, the real big kicker folks, those of you that have inadvertently become errorists, anytime you see in an email it says, send this to everyone you know, that's your first red flag. What makes you an authority on all these complicated things that you should just be taking this and running with it and sending it to everybody you know? That's what you got to ask yourself. Am I willing to take the time to validate or verify this information before I send it out? Because if I'm not, I shouldn't do it. If I am, let me go find the resource. Let me go to CNN's website and see if there's any discussion about this at all. And sure enough, can't find it. Those of you that want to know, again, you got to be really careful if you're going to start broadcasting things like that. There's always that issue of, is this real information? Is it not? There's plenty of resources out there for folks to get their information, so let those other resources be the town crier, if you will. But Snopes?
Snopes, yeah. Snopes, you can always search on there. But
Snopes.
Like, wasn't there a holiday worm or something a while back, like 2004? I don't even remember. It was like supposedly all hype.
Well, no.
Just made it up.
What they're getting good at, these guys that perpetrate these false emails, is they get the description so close to a real virus or a real issue, so that it's real easy to get it confused. So that if you go to Snopes now, you're going to see, oh, yeah, it was real. But if you actually read the details, you realize, no, this is one that's trying to look like a real worm or virus. Again, if you absolutely cannot validate it, don't get involved in being an errorist.
And make sure you don't pronounce a T before that. You might hurt somebody's feelings.
Correct. Yes.
Agitate someone.
But that's, you know what, when you hear errorist, usually you don't even have to explain it. You start to get it pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
Right. So it's a good one. All right, before we went to break, Sherry, thanks for holding or connecting back up with us. And how about that Geek Speak of the Week? Huh? Is that a good one?
Yes, that's awesome. I get those all the time. The other thing to point out in addition to that on the same vein is all of these lottery winnings, someone died in a plane.
Yes.
And you're going to get $50 billion if you just pay $25, $85, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I know 100 people over the years that have paid, actually have taken plane trips to England because they thought they won the lottery.
Yes. Yes, if it's too good
and
to be true,
yeah.
Especially if it came in email, just something out of the blue, just dropped out of the sky.
Yeah, Nigeria, and,
right.
Good for that, Denmark.
And I actually, having been in consumer electronics, I remember in, I think it was in 1982, was the first time I got, and this was back, obviously, before the internet, we got a fax with that exact Nigerian scam in a fax.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's how long it's been around. This isn't even an internet thing. Yeah. It's just scamming human beings. So,
yeah.
All right, so but before we went to break, we talked about the fact that you now have an actual website up. Which,
yes, I put a web page up
right,
on my
website.
Right, and
you're saying some of this nonsense actually slowed down.
It did slow down,
which,
and it's just a page. It's not
right.
A
and which
big
was,
website.
To me, that was pretty curious because one of the things that happens when you put a website up, and I went and took a look at your website real quick, and you have on your website very clearly right on the web or on the homepage,
mm-hmm.
It shows email and it shows your email address.
Yes.
Okay? So there are things out there called email harvesters.
Okay.
And all they do, there's these automated programs that just go around, they look at every website, and they try to harvest. Wow.
Sorry.
The dog's a
he's
fan,
a Maltese,
too.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's a fan. That's okay. Tell him I said,
He's heard you for years.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay. sit. Roll over. so the fact that you have this very easy to read email address, the harvesters can come right along and go, obviously that's a valid address, and they harvest that and they put it into a database. Okay, and so now they know A, that's a valid domain, and B, that's a valid email address. Okay, so a couple things you can do is check the resources.
Sorry, I'll cut the mic.
That's okay. That's okay. I like chocolate Maltese. No, chocolate malt. No, it's not
anyway.
One of those.
He's an angel multi.
You can actually look at all the different ways you can combat email harvesters. That's one of the links we have on our website. Since you own a website, and anybody else that owns a website, you want to think about that. One of the things you can do is put a form up that says, if you'd like to email me, please use this form. Because then the form does not expose your email address.
Perfect.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's really a big problem for companies that have listings of thousands of company contacts. With mm-hmm. That's something that most of them have figured out to do. There's also, if you really want to get going, you're going to have to get with your webmaster to do this. There's actually companies that have software that will actually poison those email harvesters, put them into this infinite loop of garbage emails, and fill them up with garbage. So if you really want to get nasty,
I don't want to do that.
You can have
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
You can have the web. Yeah, but these people need to be taught a lesson, right? Let's make them waste their time. No, it's just a simple little code that you can put on your website that will cause these harvesters to act crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can, anybody that wants to look up those kinds of resources, you can just search for in Google email harvester. Poison, or I mean, there's poison. I think was one of the programs. But anyway, you'll find it if you start looking at those kinds of things. Sherry, thank you so much for holding through that and sharing that. I think a lot of people learned from your situation.
Thank you.
Good luck out there. Do your homework with all the links that we've got posted, so that you can start to make some changes in how you're doing things to maybe try to minimize this for the future.
Greatly appreciate it.
And call your hosting company to see if they can help you.
Yes.
All right.
I never thought of that. Thank you very much.
At your service, ma'am.
Thank you. You guys are awesome. We all love you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
And we can count a Maltese in our fan club. Speaking of fan clubs, I'm a big fan of Carla Cruz because she tells you how to stay away from the traffic. Oh, that's very 70s, isn't it?
Pretty retro.
Groovy, dude. Right on. It's the Computer Corner with the Data Doctors. Every Saturday midday-ish. Think about what part of the world you're listening to. Sherry, as it turns out, was calling from Las Vegas. But
really?
That's okay, because Vegas and Phoenix are on the same time zone. Yeah. Right? You East Coasters, great. Hey, by the way, if you like what you hear and you want more of it, there's no shortage. DataDoctors.com, where you can read our advice columns. You can subscribe to our free newsletter. You can search our database of questions and answers. You can listen to previous radio shows on demand, podcasts. You can click over to CNN, search for Data Doctors or Ken Colburn, and look at all the different videos that we've done with them, including the one I did this morning on this subject. Why people are, using your email address without your permission. All of that and more, datadoctors.com, yours absolutely free of charge. Good stuff?
Great stuff.
Great stuff. Well, let's go to the email bag here. There's a couple of interesting questions in here. Imogene. Imogene, I think that's how you say it. Imogene. Imogene, right? She writes and says, I used to be able to connect my media card reader into my USB port. It would open up and I could look what's on the card. Now I can't. It will not open up. I can look on my computer and see it under devices and storage removal section. Can you tell me what to do for it? Will open up when I... Okay. Basically, help.
Yeah.
I'm plugging it in. It ain't happening. Couple things to think about, those of you that have these card readers that also have a printer that you've purchased in the last 2 years. Just about every printer, even the least expensive printer out there now, has built into it a card reader. And so if you have a printer with a card reader and four or five different card slots, and then you plug in a card reader that has four or five or six or 12 of its own, there are often situations where they will conflict with one another because you have two different devices that are trying to serve the same purpose. So that's the first thing to check to see if that's a possible conflict. Usually when something was working and it stopped working, there's a catalyst, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shooting stars, vernal equinox, bad hair day, something. Right? There's some external kind of cause of that. So take a look to see, has anything changed? Is this a new card reader? Did you get a new printer? Those kinds of things. At the end of the day, though, with all this stuff, simplify your life, and it's probably going to work better. It's probably going to work longer. It's probably going to work properly. So take a look at those things. Otherwise, you're going to have to go back through, uninstall the card reader, uninstall everything, try reinstalling it, and see if it recognizes again. But the order in which you install these things a lot of times will have a lot to do with whether you're going to get it to work or not. If you installed the card reader, and then you got a new printer and installed it, and then you came back in with a card reader, I've seen that scenario where no dice.
There's a silly thing, too. Sometimes when you put in media, whether it be a card reader or a CD, in Windows XP, there's a little menu that comes up that says, do you want to open this? And down at the bottom, it says, do not take this action or do not pop up again. And sometimes people rely on that auto run type of thing to be able to open it up. And if they ever said, do not do this again,
it won't.
Why in the world isn't this happening again?
Good point, Imogene. If you're running Windows Vista especially, there's a likelihood that the user access control, somewhere along the line, you told it, ignore this thing from now on. You didn't mean to, but you did. So check that out if you will. 602-277-5827. We got about a half an hour left. We got Dirk on the line. We're going to let him tease his question because we're about to come up on a break here, but I want to get the question and then tease it so that we can get you a great answer afterwards. Dirk, what's going on in your world?
All right, good. How are you guys doing today?
You know, another day in paradise.
Awesome. All right, I have three laptops hooked up to a wireless system.
Okay.
I have a wireless printer, and it's a fax machine, scanner, and all the other stuff.
Woohoo!
We can scan stuff and receive it on our computers. We have to actually plug in to the printer every single time to print. It won't actually do it wirelessly.
You want all this stuff to work every time?
It doesn't even work once.
You want all this stuff to work? Absolutely. Actually, these are very common situations that we run into, and we're going to give you our advice on the other side of the break. Hang tight there, Dirk. Wireless. Earlier in the show we talked about, well, you know, sometimes wireless, as cool as it is, not necessarily the best solution. So we'll talk about how you determine when to use wireless and when to stop trying to use wireless, and what the pitfalls are if you are going to commit to a wireless life, because there are some downsides. And we'll discuss all of that with the Data Doctors when we come back. It's the Computer Corner. Join us online at datadoctors.com/radio and check out all the resources we have offered for you today. Stay tuned. By the way, those of you that have emailed, and many of you do during the show, saying, I'm getting this error message. What do I do? You do a great job. You give us the error message word for word. Kudos to you, because as tech support people, worst thing in the world is to have somebody call up and go, I'm getting this error. It says something failure. That's of no help. So you've taken the first step to document the error. The second step is, if you can get through, great. If not, put that error message into Google with quotation marks around the error message and hit enter, search, and you will find lots and lots of possibilities of why you're getting that error message. And then you can determine, does this relate to me? Does it not relate to me? You'd be surprised how many websites are out there with your exact error message. The solution for you, unfortunately, error messages can be very generic. So that's where the tough part comes in. Somebody with the knowledge is going to have to weed through all that to figure out what the solution is. So it's like with anything else we say on this show when it comes to your computer problems. Time or money, decide which one you want to spend. If you don't want to deal with the time, part with your money. If you don't want to deal with the money, part with your time. If you're willing to go through it, there's plenty of resources out there on the internet that can walk you through this. Or if you get lucky, you can call in like Dirk did, and you know, we can try to, the best we can, figure out what's going on without seeing it and try to give you some advice. So, Dirk, you're calling. You have a wireless printer.
Yes.
But it doesn't want to play.
Exactly.
And you described to me that you have three laptops. They're all connecting wirelessly. That's a new word in the vernacular, wirelessly. Can you imagine all our English teachers rolling over? The wireless connections work fine because you can surf the internet and do all that stuff, right?
Of course.
Okay. So the problem is you can't get these things to print unless you physically plug the printer in to each laptop.
Uh-huh.
So what that tells me is when you installed the printer drivers, you did it traditionally, like as if you were going to be plugging your computer in. That's the way that the CD comes from the factory, assuming you're going to plug the computer directly into the printer. So it's looking for what's called a local connection, local port. Okay. And so that's the way you install the software. That's the only way it's going to print. So what you're probably going to need to do is uninstall the printer driver. And instead of putting the CD in, go to your control panel and say add printer, or go to the printer area and say add new printer. And the first question it's going to ask you is local printer or network printer. And because you're trying to print through this wireless print server, that's known as a network printer. So you're telling the computer, okay, I'm going to print through the network, not through my port. Okay, and if you do that, that's probably going to take care of the problem.
All right.
Unfortunately, you're going to have to do that to all three machines because, you know, and I understand why you did what you did, because the instructions say, do not plug the printer in, don't do anything, put the CD in first.
Exactly.
Right? Unfortunately, they weren't talking about a network printer.
Alrighty then.
They're talking about a local printer, so that's likely. Now, you did the right thing, because I know people that have print servers that are wireless, and they don't connect the print server to the router. So now you have two wireless connections, either one of which could cause the problem. So if you reduce the number of wireless connections, which you've done a good job there. You just made that one slight error when you went to install everything. And I'm sure if you just take care of that, you'll be in great shape.
Sounds good.
Dirk, thanks for calling.
Thanks for your help, guys.
All right, and thanks for sharing your pain. And hopefully somebody that's out there that's going, oh, I'm having that same problem. It's the point of the show, right, Taylor?
Right.
You going to take over for this so I can play golf on Saturdays someday?
No, I'm going to make you suffer.
All right. You know what? This is not suffering. This is a lot of fun.
Helping, it is.
Helping people is always fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you have a question, we're here till the top of the hour. 602-277-5827. Very unusual, but phone lines are open. We're going to go back to the phones, though, and see if we can help Tom, who's got... you like music, don't you, Tom?
Yes, I do.
You like music so much that you don't just have one MP3 player. You have...
Two.
And you have two completely different MP3 players.
Yes.
And you're asking one printer or one computer to be the gateway for both of those devices.
Yes.
And you did get it to work for a while.
Well, it worked. I just recently got the second MP3. In fact, it was just delivered yesterday, the second MP3 player. So
is that when the tragedy began?
No.
No.
It actually began before that.
And okay. So we just made things worse.
I probably did, yeah.
Very common. It's this is how it works, man. Don't worry about it. Okay, so... You were having problems with, let's identify, you've got two different MP3 players. Was one Creative?
Yes.
And was the new one a different brand?
Yes, it's a Dell.
Dell, okay. I'm trying to remember who makes Dell's MP3 players. I mean, Dell doesn't make them.
I think it's Creative.
Yeah. So, but it's a different branded version. So
yes.
the problem anytime, well, first of all, before the Dell showed up, you had a failure to communicate with your Creative, right?
Yeah, I did, yes.
And don't feel bad, because that's not uncommon. We see it a lot. Okay.
It
comes down to software and drivers. Something, you know, when's the last time it actually worked?
Oh, probably about a month ago.
Okay. Anything you can think of that was changed, added, removed in the last month?
No. The only thing that I can think, no, I can't, no. Not since then.
Okay. So here's a little trick to figure out, to kind of jog your memory, to figure out if something actually was added that you forgot about. If you open up My Computer,
mm-hmm.
you know how it opens up to the, shows you all your drives?
Yes.
Okay. Open up your C drive, which is typically your startup drive.
Yeah.
And then change the view to details.
Okay.
Okay, and what that'll do is it'll list out all the folders, their sizes, the type, and then the date modified. The date modified is the key.
Okay.
If you click on the date modified twice, it will resort everything in that drive. Most recent entry first, oldest entry last.
Okay.
So you want to go to the program files folder in your C drive, because that's where, when you install something, it goes.
Yeah.
And do the same thing to C. Okay, wait a minute. Look at those four things that got in there in the last month.
Okay.
What the heck are they? Oh, yeah. I don't really need that.
Okay.
Come to think of it, it did stop working after I installed that. It's just a quick way to back up what you think happened.
Okay.
Or to expose the fact that something happened you weren't aware of.
Okay.
Okay? But that is the problem. And unfortunately, did you already install all the software that came with the Dell?
I did.
Okay. So that's just going to, you know, because there was already a problem,
mm-hmm.
and then you threw a bunch of extra people in there. It's like a homeowner association meeting when you had two really upset people,
uh-huh.
and then you added five more.
Okay.
This meeting's going to be tough unless you can get everybody out of the pool, deal with them one at a time.
All right. So okay? The drivers for the new one?
I would uninstall the drivers for both devices.
Okay.
Okay, and then follow the instructions that came with each one of them.
Okay.
Okay, don't move to the second one until the first one works. Get what you had working again.
Okay.
And then move on to the next one. That make sense?
Yes.
Something to do for the weekend, huh?
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You bet. Good luck, Tom.
All right.
And, your favorite artist?
Beatles.
The Beatles. That's not hard to be the favorite, is it?
No.
No, it's not.
All right. Take care now.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
The Beatles. Who doesn't love the Beatles? You?
I like them.
Okay. You do?
I won't say they're my favorite, but I can relax to it.
You're just too young,
I guess.
Taylor, you like the Beatles.
I like the Beatles. Well, I don't love them.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I force-fed you the Beatles all through your younger years.
Yeah, but I mean...
And I made you sing those songs with me, didn't I?
Even though I sang all the lyrics wrong.
Right. Well, don't we all?
Yeah, that's true.
We all live in a yellow... What was that?
There's nothing that rhymes with submarine. How do you get that mixed up?
Oh, I think you can probably, as a songwriter, find a word that rhymes with submarine. In fact, Keith...
Yeah.
Can you think of anything that rhymes with submarine? Then you're like me, and you're not a songwriter either. You're having some problems with virtual memory?
Virtual memory.
Now, you know, virtual memory in the world of Windows is what I call pretend memory.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
No.
Do you understand the concept of virtual memory?
No.
Okay.
I use a Mac predominantly. It's not really my computer. I'm just asking him.
I see. Okay. Yeah. This is one of those I'm asking for a friend questions, huh?
Yeah.
So think of, I'm going to pull out my old computer kitchen analogy that I've used for 15 years. Think of the computer like a kitchen, okay? The processor, in most cases, it's like Intel or AMD.
Okay.
That's the chef, okay? That's the guy that does the work. So the faster your chef is, by all rights, you should be able to prepare more food faster, right?
Yeah.
The chef, in order to cook, needs a mixing bowl, okay? The mixing bowl is your RAM. It's your active memory, okay? The bigger the mixing bowl, the more food they can work with at any given time, okay? That's why when you hear add memory, add RAM, because it'll make your machine faster, it's better to have a slow chef with a large mixing bowl than it is to have a fast chef with a small mixing bowl. That make sense?
Makes sense.
Okay, so what Windows does, and then the third component is your hard drive. That's like your refrigerator. It's a storage space, okay?
Correct.
Okay, that's also a memory device, but you don't actually cook in there, right? You just pull stuff out and put it back in, okay? So, virtual memory is when Windows runs out of space in the mixing bowl. It needs more working space to continue its cooking. And it clears off a shelf in the hard drive as temporary workspace. And you can see how convoluted this is from a cooking example. And it's the same thing with computers. The virtual memory is nowhere near as fast as actual RAM. Okay, but if you don't have enough RAM to do the things you're trying to do, then Windows has to go out and take a piece of the hard drive and use that as an extension or virtual memory.
Okay,
and swap information in and out of there. It's not near as fast, but it's a way to get around the fact that I need more memory right now.
Okay.
I'm cooking for 8 people. I got to have that extra room, right?
So is it possible? I have 46 free space, 46 gigabytes of free space, and I can't play the thing. Is that...
Well, how much actual RAM do you have?
I think it said like, I don't know. Give me a figure. I
mean, is it 512? Is it 1 gig? Is it?
Yeah, 1 gig.
Okay,
yeah.
So they should have enough. What are you trying to do? First of all, maybe
no,
that's
it's a computer game for a little girl, and it's called I Spy. It's an old game.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, what version of Windows are you running?
XP.
Okay. And how old is this game? Is it like really old? Like,
I would say like 98 maybe, like
okay.
Or 2000. I have no idea.
So this is before Windows XP actually came out.
Yeah.
Okay, so the problem is probably not any of this stuff. The problem is probably that piece of software and your operating system don't like each other.
Okay.
That piece of software has no idea how to work with XP because XP didn't exist when they wrote the program.
Oh, I see.
Okay, so that's probably what it is because you've got plenty of RAM to run something like iSpy.
And that's why I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, and the virtual memory is, let's say you were using like Photoshop or you're doing video editing or you're doing something, you know, fairly high level that takes a lot of space. You're working with these really high quality digital images.
Yeah.
Then you would need that. But if you're just trying to run this computer game, that's probably the problem. So what you can do is go onto Google, type in iSpy, running iSpy on Windows in Windows XP.
Oh, okay.
Or iSpy version, whatever you have.
Okay.
In Windows XP to find out, you know, if other people go, yeah, I tried it, I bumped my head against everything, I couldn't get it to work, it's not going to work, or here's the workaround.
Oh, I gotcha.
Make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, because you got this. You got these two things that were never really designed to work with each other. So now you got to hope that somebody else figured it out for you.
Sweet.
I mean, we're good. Datadoctors are good. We're just not that good.
Yeah.
So,
right.
But we give you the information to go find the answer.
Okay.
All right?
I was thinking about it, maybe chlorine, submarine. I don't know.
Chlorine. Hey, there we go. See?
You're a smart man.
He is a smart man, and you're now an official Computer Corner songwriter.
Sweet. All right. Have a good one, guys. Thank you.
Take care now. Speaking of officials, Carla Cruz is officially our traffic person. Throws a little weather on the side. Would you like fries with that? Carla, official. Take it away. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about what we have been talking about, or at least we have information posted for those that care about this whole issue of why is somebody using my email address? Why am I getting stuff for myself? Why? You've all had to go through this. You've all experienced it. Check out our resources at datadoctors.com/radio. And you will see and understand a lot more about why that's happening. And next week, we're going to be doing our annual Recycle Your Computer events with the Arizona Strut organization and Intel and Motorola and everybody. This is our eighth year doing this. So all of you that have all that old technology, you've been waiting for this event. It's coming next week. Mark it on your calendar. Cell phones, old set-top boxes, VCRs, doesn't matter. If it's old electronics, we want to make sure it doesn't end up in the landfills. They're saying 40% of the lead that's in landfills is coming from consumer electronics. Let's stop that. Now I am a tree hugger.
Yes, you are.
You feeling me?
I feel it.
Let's go back to the phones here and talk to Lorna, who, on the heels of that discussion about virtual memory and the computer kitchen and the mixing bowl, You have a mixing bowl question.
I do.
Thanks for coming in, or thanks for joining us. What can we do for you?
I just wanted to know if I am able to install more memory myself, or if I need to take it in and have it done.
And you want to add more RAM. You want a bigger mixing bowl because?
Because I am running Vista Ultimate, and all I have is 1 gig, and I understand that Vista uses almost 1 gig.
Well, as I told you off the air, Vista is... there's a technical term for how Vista deals with memory. It's a pig. Vista and Vista Ultimate, which has all the latest, greatest, and goodies.
Right.
Yeah, that's your minimum system memory is 1 gigabyte. Now, are you increasing the RAM just to do it, or are you trying to solve a problem?
Well, I have Media Center on there also, and so that...
Okay, but are you experiencing a performance problem?
Just like it's little, does a little jerks, just piece by piece by piece by piece, you know, it isn't an even smooth flow of if I want to watch television on my computer.
Okay, well, that's actually because of the hard drive that's, if it's like a streaming video,
yeah.
Right, it's a video playback.
Yes.
That's probably more likely that it's a hard drive issue, because the hard drive's responsible for feeding that information, and if it can't do it quick enough, that's where you get those stopping and jerking.
Oh, so how do I solve that problem?
Well, somebody needs to double check before you go spend the money on RAM. Somebody needs to check to make sure that that's really the issue.
Oh, okay.
Because it should work fine. It shouldn't be doing that with a gigabyte of RAM, unless you've done other things that I'm not aware of that's loading up the operating system. Because see, there's this process called buffering that occurs with streaming video.
Right.
So before you see it, there's a secondary place where it sends the stuff up. Okay, so that if something happens, your viewing pleasure does not get interrupted because there's time for that to get caught up. So even if you're a little low on RAM, it should be able to keep feeding that buffer so that you notice a nice smooth playback. Okay, so if you're getting a lot of starting and stopping, it is possible that the computer itself needs more RAM because of all the stuff you have loaded. Do you know how to check for the number of running processes?
Is that Task Manager?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
And how many running processes do you have, do you know?
A lot.
Okay, so if you were to clean that up, you'd probably get it back to where this thing operates properly. It sounds like Windows is being asked to juggle too many things at once.
But how do I know what to take out and what not to take out?
Well, the question you had earlier about can I do this myself?
Yeah.
Okay, if you're willing to, and we've got lots of things on our website that talk about how to deal with these things. If you want to take the time to learn all of that, to do this, you can eventually get this thing cleaned up to the point where, you know, it's running well. But if it's a real big mess, it might be time to call in somebody that really understands Windows to really get through this and figure it all out. So instead of spending that money and time on RAM, which probably wouldn't have made any difference, spend it on something that will make a difference. But before you spend any money, somebody needs to evaluate this for you.
Okay, now I've gone into Test Manager a couple of times and like I've deleted a few things, but
that's not going to work. So hang tight here because we're coming up on a break. I'll help you off the air. Just look for processes in our free help center for any of you that want to deal with this yourself. Ken Colburn, Kevin Church, Taylor Colburn, Data Doctors, we're out.